Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. All your texts, all your voicemails, drop those there, 331-979-1369. Did all of our voicemails, those were just released. Released this morning, so an hour of content for you guys there. Plus, on top of that, we're going to go through all of the text messages today as well. We have plenty to discuss and get into, so we have a double episode on this Thursday, and then we will have more content for you on Friday. But Matt, how you doing? One day closer to the weekend. I'm actually heading out of town for a buddy's bachelor party tomorrow morning, headed out to Colorado. So anybody out there that's listening to us right now that maybe be in Colorado, you can hit me up with some of the best places to eat, some places that we should visit while we're out there, going out there for 4 days. That would be awesome. Drop it to our text and voicemail line. But how you doing? What are you doing this weekend?
What up, Jordan? What up, Bulls Nation? Looking forward to the weekend as well. I got a buddy of mine who lives out in San Francisco, lifelong friend, know each other since back in our grade school dates. He always comes into Chicago for a week every summer to catch a game at Wrigley with friends and family, do a few other Chicago things, you know, get himself some deep dish and a couple of Italian beefs. So this is the weekend he's coming into town, excited for that, and also very excited because today and working on into the weekend and next week is officially the start of Bears football. Players officially arriving, all players arriving down at Bourbonnais for training camp starting today, and I am just so giddy. I don't know about you. I've never come into a Bears season with more hype and more expectation, and as long as I can remember, because essentially, you know, this is how I feel. It's Super Bowl or bust for the Bears right now. After that disappointing playoff exit last year, adding some nice pieces in the offseason, still have arguably one of the most talented rosters in the league, and we got Bears Packers to kick things off. Just a few, you know, few short weeks away. We got like Bears preseason just a couple weeks away. I'm so stoked, man. I'm going to be just all over Bears Twitter for the next 48 hours.
Not only that, I'm excited for college football to get started back up again. I mean, I went to a school that wasn't really per se a football school. Although shout out to Jordan
Indiana
Howard.
Indiana football has been rough for a while.
It has, but they have developed some talent that has gone to the NFL. Shout out to Jordan Howard, Nate Sudfeld, local guy in Jason Spriggs. A bunch of other guys, too, that have gone to the NFL. Most notably, though, I think the guy that everybody knows pretty handedly that's come out of Indiana over the last 20 years, Antoine Randall-L. So that's kind of cool. Super Bowl champion as well. But yeah, usually after like the third or the fourth game where they end up going on a losing streak once Big Ten play starts, that's about the end. But they've been to bowl games in their last 3 years, so that's been pretty sweet to see. But yeah, excited for college football as well. While we're talking about this real quick before we get our text and voicemail line, did you see the Pat Fitzgerald's like minute and a half rant that he went on the other day at Big Ten Media Day where he was talking about kids on their phones and declining attendance at college football?
Yeah, I did. I saw that.
To me, man, I understand kind of where he was coming from with that, but I felt like it was a little bit of old man yelling at a cloud kind of thing to me. Like, I understand what he was saying about people being just so attached to their phones now, which I kind of agree with that. You know, everybody's got their heads down buried in their phone and not looking up, having conversations with each other. But then to blame it on people who don't go to football games is a little bit drastic, because you look at the price of tickets now and the cost to go to an actual game is incredibly expensive. And I feel like that's not just college football. It's across the board. MLB and NBA, NHL, NFL games. NFL games probably are the most expensive to go to, right? Outside of maybe like a Blackhawks game or an NBA game, you're going to a Warriors game or a Lakers game. But yeah, I just found that very interesting. And there was a lot of heated debate back and forth between millennials of our generation and the older generations to kind of agreeing with what Pat Fitzgerald was saying. But I also, I'm kind of 50-50 on it, but it just made me think about kind of how the NBA interacts with each other and how they kind of embrace that go digital, look on your phone all the time, get your updates there, as opposed to kind of complaining about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, there are a lot of elements to what Fitzgerald was saying and the reactions from people of different generations that followed it. I don't necessarily think it was old man yells at cloud kind of material. I think that a lot of what he said is dead on and accurate. And I look around all the time, you know, on the L, walking around, you know, even just like down the sidewalk, people crossing streets, just staring down at their phones. People in bars, people in, you know, people at parties, in social circles, everyone's just looking at their phones. And it is entirely worrying and depressing to think about the direction humanity's headed, because there's just so much of a like level of disengagement and separation from actual human contact and interaction these days that really does, you know, turn my stomach at times when I realize what's going on. Again, I'm guilty of it a lot myself. In today's world, being a sports fan who's engaged, not just a sports fan, but someone who's working in sports media, part of the game experience, and you know, Pat Fitzgerald, that's where I don't necessarily entirely agree with him and say, well, the reason that people don't go to games is because they're staring at their phones. In a weird way, he's not entirely wrong, but to me, it's more about the fact that these days, most sports fans, and like NBA Twitter, of course, is the biggest of all of this, I think, but obviously also with like fantasy football and NFL Sundays, it's very much the same thing. Is you're engaging with your phone and Twitter as much as you are with anyone that you're watching the game with who's sitting on the couch with you or sitting on the couch next to you. And that's become part of the fan experience. I'm going to live tweet this game while I watch this game, so much so that some of the focus has been pulled from watching and ingesting and enjoying the game itself to making sure, oh, I got to come up with this clever tweet, or I got to interact with this person on Twitter who has a different opinion than I do about the game that was the play that just happened or the officials review that just happened. It's become a part of it. It's become a huge part of it. And
most teams have started to embrace it too, like embrace the fact that people are using social media as a way to get, you know, get all of their content right away or see a replay right away. And I agree with what he was saying before that, like, it is scary to think about that everybody's just staring down at their phone, not actually interacting with people. Where he lost me was the decline in attendance is directly caused because of social media, and people want to just stay home and watch their games, you know, on their 15 TV setup. Like, man, people do that because we can't afford to go to the games anymore. Like, a college student can't even afford to go to the games anymore. I mean, tickets are between $60 and $100.
The student section,
it's just a ticket.
Like, if you are a active student, then going in, sitting in the student section is not expensive.
Sure. After you're out of the student section, and even that, like the student tickets, like when I was in Indiana, I got all tickets for the student section for Indiana basketball, and they were outrageously expensive for students still. I think I paid probably $700 to $1,000 for a lot of 8 games, and half of those games that I had weren't even Big Ten games. They were games against Eastern Kentucky State and these really tiny schools at the beginning of the season. So that's kind of where I just got lost from it. And I was thinking about ticket sales for like the Bulls games and for going to NBA games or other Chicago sports games. Those have gotten ridiculously expensive too. Like, we were talking about just 2 years ago when the rebuild started and the Bulls were awful. Tickets were still $80 to $120 to sit up in the nosebleeds.
Yeah, I mean, that is crazy. And, you know, just me personally, I enjoy going and watching college football games. You know, I'm a Northwestern Wildcats fan, and it's a short trek up to Ryan Field from where I live here in Chicago. So when I have the opportunity, I have some friends who are alumni of Northwestern. They usually, you know, go to a couple of games every season when they're in town, and I'll go with them if they have an extra ticket. I love going to Ryan Field. College football in general is a really enjoyable environment for me. But the one hang-up that is a problem for me is that you can't get beer at a college football game. You know, there's the tailgating that happens before the game itself, but with most of these central time football, you know, like kickoffs at like 11 a.m. or noon, I'm not trying to get up and start drinking at 9 or 10 in the morning to get drunk enough to then go into the stadium where I can't get beer to watch a football yeah. game. I'm too old for that shit. So, to me, there are many elements outside of, oh, people are too busy staring at their phones that may be involved in a decline in attendance in specific college football.
So, areas. I just wanted to react to that really quickly because it was just kind of funny. I agreed with half of it and agreed with the other half. And, I mean, I'm only 25, and a lot of people were saying, oh, he's just blaming millennials, and no millennial is ever going to agree with this. And I don't think that's true at all. You're a millennial, too, so, like, it just felt like he was, yeah, technically.
Well, yeah, technically. I think there's like an ongoing confusion right now about the actual gap or like the span of years that quantify who millennials are. And I think you are technically like a post-millennial. Because millennials start, I want to say, in like, you know, if you were born in 1982 to 1988 or 89 or 90 or something, and then there's like post millennials after that. But I mean, like, even just the 7-year gap that exists between you and I still remember growing up in a world that was not in like completely revolved around technology. When I was a kid in grade school, our school library had like 2 Apple computers in it, and that was it. I didn't have a phone growing up. I didn't have like tablets and iPads and all that shit growing up. I would like type out school papers on a very old shitty computer that had like Microsoft Word and 2 other programs. And I was not staring at my phone all day. I was outside running around, playing sports, riding my bike. There is a gap there that exists that like we have now gotten to a point where some of the young adults in the country's workforce are kids who grew up with technology in their hands since they were a toddler.
Agreed.
And there's very much a gap that exists there.
That's mostly Gen Z, I feel like, and that's the generation that was born. If you were born in 1996 or to present day, you're a part of Gen Z. Millennials or Gen Y are people that were born between 1977 and 1995. So I'm really like kind of at the end of the millennial generation. And then Gen X is 1965, 1976. But yeah, you're right. You're totally right. But I can still remember anybody that was born in 92, 93, 94, 95 can still remember the age of having to sit there and go on dial-up internet, man. Like, I remember the first time I had a computer here at my house. Dude. We still had dial-up internet
AOL
to begin.
AOL Instant
right,
Messenger,
beginning
man.
In the early 2000s, and you couldn't go on the internet if somebody had to get a phone call, or nobody could call your phone yep. line, which was just absolutely ridiculous. But kind of part of the generation that has grown up and grown with social media, which is weird, because again, think about a time where YouTube wasn't even around, or it was very, very young, very young stages of YouTube. So yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about.
Which is usually why, like, when I'm interacting with people on Twitter about the NBA and Bulls basketball, it's like, if I can tell just by our interactions and interchanges that you're like 18 or 19 years old, I'm sorry, but your opinion just means nothing to me. It's just nothing.
Damn, that's harsh. That is harsh. But yeah, that was just an interesting thing that I had saw, and I was curious what your opinion was. But let's hit up our text and voicemail line. We're going to get to all the texts today. Again, you can drop us something at 331-979-1369. The place to do that. Let's kick this off with our first text. This is from Nick from the University of Minnesota. He said, about a year ago, I was asked whether you guys would prefer to be in the Bulls position or the T-Wolves position. That was after one season of trading Jimmy Butler, but now after 2 seasons removed, who'd you guys rather have as a building block? What the Wolves have right now or what the Bulls have right now?
So what would I... Did he say he was asked that question?
Yeah, he asked us that a year ago around this time.
He asked us that a year ago. Okay. And I think we both said the Bulls, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I still feel that way just based on how disastrous the Jimmy Butler experiment was for Minnesota and what they gave up. I mean, could you imagine Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Karl Anthony Towns playing together? Maybe you could say that overall right now, and not just maybe, but I think pretty confidently you could say that right now, of the two teams, Minnesota has the best player in Karl Anthony Towns. I don't think there's any debating that. But when you look at the scope of what has happened in the past couple of years and the trajectory of what these teams are capable of doing in the coming years, collectively, I still like the Bulls' position more. And I think a part of that goes back to our conversation the other day about whether or not Karl Anthony Towns will actually remain happy being in Minnesota and if he actually will continue to play out the best prime years of his career there or if he will insist on leaving.
I'm with you, too. I guess I kind of want to do it this way. Would you rather have the Bulls GM front office and ownership, or would you rather have the Timberwolves GM owner and like entire franchise, the front office of the Wolves? So Wolves or Bulls?
Can I say neither?
If you had to pick one, if you had a gun to your head, had to pick one.
I've lived a good life. I'll take the bullet. I mean, I don't know. Just like default answer, give me Minnesota because it's something different. I'm sick of what we have right now.
I'm probably with you. I'd probably take the Wolves ownership over the Bulls ownership at this point. How about coaching staff? Would you rather have Ryan Saunders or Jim Boylan and his coaching staff?
We haven't seen a whole lot of Ryan Saunders yet as a head coach. You know, we know that he's made a strong resume as a young guy in the league, you know, working on staffs before getting his first head coaching opportunity. But I mean, you can't deny that it's a great story in Minnesota when there really isn't much in the, you know, along the lines of great stories in Minnesota basketball over the last couple of years. That, you know, the father-son story of the late great Flip Saunders and what he meant to that organization, and now his son kind of being passed the torch, posthumously. And to me, like, that's I still haven't seen enough of Ryan Saunders to believe or not believe in his chops as a NBA head coach. He's still so young and we've only gotten a very small sample size. Jim Boylan is just, you know, a creature of his own being and his own habits and his own, mode of operation. So to me, it's kind of a hard question to answer because one is so young and one is so freaking weird.
Yeah. In terms of coaching though, they both coached about the same amount of games. So right now I think I would take the younger coach in the Wolves. It would take the chance on Ryan Saunders as opposed to maybe what Jim Boylan is doing. And that's just more so what I want to see as far as style goes. And then overall roster, I like what the Wolves have, man. Like, remember, they traded up to get Jared Culver at number 6 just a few weeks ago. They also have Karl Anthony Towns. They have Josh Okogie, who I thought was a great pick, which was taken one pick after the Bulls pick of Chandler Hutchison. And they've got guys like Robert Covington, who's a great vet. They have Dario Saric, too, who's a younger player. They still have Andrew Wiggins, which is crazy about Andrew Wiggins, man. He's going to be 24 when the season starts. Like, that dude feels like he's been around forever and still has a lot of years left to play. So I'm wondering what he can end up being or if it's just what we kind of been seeing. But I kind of like what the Wolves have done and put together here with after all the disaster that happened with Jimmy Butler. But still, I think I would take the Bulls roster, although Karl Anthony Towns makes the roster comparisons very, very, very close. But I think I'm still going to take the Bulls roster overall.
Yeah, and I mean, don't forget that Wiggins contract right now is one of the least desirable contracts in the league.
That's true. That is true. I think they only got 3 more years of that. We'll see what happens with that. But again, he's making just about as much as Otto Porter is. And again, I feel like Otto Porter is the better player overall right now than Andrew Wiggins is. That was an interesting question. So I think overall I would take the Bulls in their position right now as opposed to where the Timberwolves are. And also have to consider the Eastern Conference compared to the Western Conference too. All the Eastern Conference got a little bit better this year with all the guys moving kind of from west to east, KD, Kyrie, DeAndre Jordan, going to the Nets, plus a couple other pieces staying with their actual teams. I still feel like the Western Conference in terms of teams, 1 through 8 that are going to make the playoffs are a lot more competitive than what the East is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. All right, let's move on to another text. This one comes to us from the 630. Hey, Jordan and Matt, love the show. Thanks for everything you do. Having a daily show about our favorite team is honestly a huge blessing. Helps me get through the week. We appreciate that. And you're welcome. In response to Matt's episode about past dynasty players potentially serving on the Bulls staff, when I was talking about Duncan joining Pop staff, two names come to mind. Steve Kerr. I know he's had health issues, but do you see a position somewhere on the Bulls staff for him if and when he moves on from Golden State? And another name that comes to mind, not a dynasty era, but still a classic, Kirk Heinrich. I'm not necessarily thinking these are possibilities based in reality, more just entertaining ideas to see what you guys think for fun. Thanks for checking in. Jordan, let's start with Steve Kerr, who's kind of made some headlines of his own recently reacting to the, you know, Anthony Davis forcing his way out of New Orleans being bad for the league. What do you think about a Steve Kerr reunion with the Bulls in some kind of coaching or perhaps even front office role?
And for that to happen, John Paxson would have to be fired or step down, right? Because think about back to what we heard in December when Steve Kerr kind of scorched the Bulls front office for doing Fred Hoiberg wrong. And then John Paxson kind of reacted that too, where he was like...
Let's clarify, Steve Kerr was not wrong about.
Agreed. Definitely. I totally agree with that. And, you know, I'm kind of a Fred Hoiberg stan, so I thought he was completely spot on. And then John Paxson kind of reacted and was like, it's easy to shoot down at other people when you sit at the top of the mountain, but you don't really know what's going on here. So it would be good to have Steve Kerr around here. I just don't see it happening as any type of reality. And same kind of goes along with the same thing with Kirk Heinrich, too. Over the last several years, we've kind of heard that Kirk Heinrich didn't like the way that things were going here and didn't have the best relationship. And also, too, I'm pretty sure he's like in the middle of nowhere, like in the Midwest, hanging out on a farm. And like, that's what he does now, which is kind of crazy to me. Like after an NBA career, the way that his is gone and the longevity that he had. And now he's just going to hang out on a farm in the middle of nowhere.
Absolutely. And if Kirk Heinrich just does that for the rest of his life, I have no problem with that. I would love...
This guy's not from the dynasty era, but I would say Rajon Rondo. We've talked about him multiple times,
yeah.
But yeah, I know he was only a Bull for a year, but still, I would love for him to be a part of
and
the coaching staff.
And I do think that those people who say that Rondo is going to be a hell of a coach someday, perhaps even a head coach, likely a head coach, I think that's right on the money. I think when you talk about some of the smartest players that have come through the league in the last 20 years, who also everyone... around, even though he's had some run-ins with coaches himself, I think most of the reasons that Rondo has butted heads with coaches is that oftentimes he thinks he knows more or knows better than the coaches who are trying to establish some kind of authoritative state over Rondo. And in many of those cases, I'm guessing that Rondo isn't wrong. And that's why he has this like headbutt, you know, chemistry, bad rep kind of stuff. But all of his teammates talk about, not all, but most of his teammates talk about him glowingly. And saying, not only is he a great teammate, but he's one of the best basketball minds I've ever come across. So, I mean, I don't think that Rondo would necessarily make the Bulls a team near the top of his list when he does hang up the sneakers and start thinking about coaching, just because his short stint here was not exactly pleasant for anyone involved. But absolutely. I mean, I would welcome that in the snap of a finger.
And the Bulls haven't added anybody like that's a former player to their coaching staff, like that's Tim Duncan level, but they still have their ambassadors in Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen and Tony Kukoc. I don't know how much those guys do in terms of recruiting players or helping the development of the players. And you have Doug Collins as well.
Right.
But yeah, they do have.
I think they come through practices every once in a while, but more of their duties revolve around wining and dining season ticket holders and things like that.
Thanks for the text. Next one here. This is from the 815. After free agency wrapped up and seems like all the major trades have passed, wanted to hear what your guys' top five power rankings would be after all the movement this offseason. Also, there's a lot of people that are hitting us up for the Fantasy Basketball League, so that's kind of cool. Appreciate everybody that's hitting us up. We'll reach out to all of you guys in the next month or so once we kind of make a plan for it, figure out who's going to be our commissioner, and we'll do kind of a lottery because there seems like there's going to be more than 12 or 15 spots to be able to fill. There's more people that want to be in there than there are spots. So maybe we can see if people want to double up and co-own a team or something like that. So we'll definitely hit people up that wanted to be a part of our fantasy basketball league this year. But Matt, power rank the, I guess, the five teams that you feel like had the best offseason so far.
Well, so wait, is this top five of best offseason moves, or is this the new top five power ranking of best teams in the league?
So I'm going to say,
what are your guys' top five power rankings would be after all of the movement?
So I think he's going with teams.
So not grading who had the best off seasons, but who were the best five teams after all the offseason moves. All right, well, I'm going to say Clippers one. I'm going to say, Milwaukee two. Lakers three. Denver four, Boston five.
Interesting. Who did Denver get this offseason? Or do you just feel like the additions that they brought back or guys that they re-signed were good enough to keep them in the top five?
You know, they got their extension done with Jamal Murray, who I think is just a really rising star in this league. Hasn't gotten a whole lot of that star level hype yet, but is just amazing. And honestly, if the West is wide open and the Nuggets have another dominant run that they had this past season in the regular season, and Jokic is a big part of that, I think he could be even more involved in the MVP conversation than he was last year.
Interesting. So my top five would be Clippers one, the Nets number two, the Lakers number three,
whoa,
the Rockets number four, and the Warriors number five.
You're putting the Nets in there even knowing that KD's out an entire year?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you just upgraded. I know D'Angelo Russell was an all-star last year, but still, you upgraded to Kyrie Irving, who's probably, what, the third best point guard in the NBA right now, if not second behind Steph Curry. So definitely, I think they totally upgraded, and they didn't lose a whole lot either. That's the thing. Like, they lost Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and D'Angelo Russell. That was pretty much everybody. Jared Dudley, too.
And Ed Davis. But they got DeAndre Jordan.
Correct. So they supplemented themselves a little bit, which was cool to see. So I definitely think that the Nets are a powerhouse, even without Kevin Durant, even if he doesn't play a single game all of next season. Wow. And then I threw the Rockets in there, too, as well. They got rid of Chris Paul and added Russell Westbrook, too. So I think that alone puts them in the top five. And then the Lakers, too. I know the Lakers had to give up a bunch and some of the role players that they re-signed, but getting Anthony Davis to pair alongside LeBron James easily puts you in this top five. And then the Warriors, too. I know they lost Kevin Durant, which is a huge loss for them, but they turned around and turned it into D'Angelo Russell, which is a good add, I thought, and kept Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry all back together. So they're worthy for me, at least, to be in the top five.
Interesting. I mean, I think Brooklyn's a playoff team for sure, but I wouldn't put them as like one of the top three teams in the league, knowing that Durant's going to be out all season. The Rockets, I think they're going to be a really fun, really exciting, and most nights pretty darn good regular season team with Harden and Westbrook. I just don't know if they can make that work. They're like two of the highest usage percentage players trying to share the ball. The Harden that we have now is not the Harden that Westbrook played with when they were in OKC. And Harden was like a six-man kind of player. I think it's going to clash. And they might end up being a team that finishes top four in the West in the regular season. But when the chips are down in the playoffs, I have no. Harden is a perennial playoff choker, and Westbrook is a perennial playoff choker. I'm not buying any of that stock.
I'm a big Russell Westbrook, James Harden fan, so I hope they have this fuck you mentality this year, and it's like everybody's doubting us, so we're just going to go out there and absolutely ball out. So I'm a huge fan of what the Rockets did, even though they don't have a first-round pick for now, like the next 6 or 7 years, which is kind of funny, but it was interesting to hear Daryl Morey talk with Ryan Russillo about this, and talked about how Ryan Russillo a few years ago had this take about, you know, just because you're collecting first round picks doesn't mean that they're going to turn out to be anything, and the value that people are overvaluing first round picks when future first round picks when they end up only turning into picks that are like in the 20s, and how often do those guys end up turning into stars or quality role players? You know, it's far more misses than there are hits in the back end of the 20s, as opposed to going out and just trading for a star right away. So that was kind of Daryl Morey's thinking, too. And he sort of agreed with what Ryan Russillo was saying. So I think it's an interesting tactic, and it's one that's kind of zagged away from what other teams in the NBA are doing when they're trying to rebuild.
I could see that. I can see that. It's just like, you know, you talked about that, that Daryl Morey talk. Daryl Morey's just like, he's bold. Yeah, like you got to give him that. He makes moves. He's aggressive. You know, he made the move to get CP3. It didn't work out. He made the move to get Westbrook. And, you know, lots of picks involved. I think a lot, and like even talking about the, you know, like your point about picks and that they're not as valuable as people want them to be or think they'll be. And I think a lot of people talk about the haul that the Clippers gave up to OKC to get Paul George. And essentially they were not only giving up those to get Paul George, but they were giving up those to get Kawhi to then get Paul George. Cause you don't get one without the other. And who knows what those picks will be worth way down the road. You know, you don't know, because the Kawhi Paul George experiment in Los Angeles might be short lived, and they might go back to being a lottery team, and those picks are meaningful. Or the Clippers might have this run of maybe not dynasty, but always perennially a playoff team, and those picks don't end up meaning much. And then, you know, you can have the same worry if you are in a situation where, you know, if you've mortgaged everything and all of these future picks, if you're Daryl Morey and the Rockets and you don't get a title done, because this is their, like, you always talk about whether the Rockets window is actually open, the only team in the West to really push the Warriors in recent years. And now the window is as open as it will be. You have a new threat to deal with a potentially healthy LeBron and AD duo in the Lakers, and now you have the threat of the reigning finals MVP Kawhi teaming up with Paul George and how good that team and all of its deep role players might be. But without Warriors being the favorites, Daryl Morey saw this opportunity to say, I'm going to make another bold move and I'm going to swing for the fences. And it, you know, might come home to roost if the Rockets don't win a title here in like the Harden prime and now getting Westbrook too. Because the future doesn't look all that great once this window closes.
Yeah, and for teams that are rebuilding or like the start of a rebuild like the Bulls were doing, totally agree that the more shots you have in the draft, the better. But I think it all comes down to how you develop your players too. Like the 76ers have been pretty decent at developing their guys that they've drafted in the top of the draft, but most of those guys were surefire hits, like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But they also had some misses too. Like Nerlens Noel ended up now is a pretty solid role player for OKC and has kind of turned his seasons around, but guys like Jahlil Okafor that they took high, Markelle Fultz, they've had misses too, so there's plenty with that. And it just kind of, I think it just goes down to team by team basis, but I thought it was an interesting thought from Daryl Morey. But thanks for the text, that's a good one. From the 219, this is Matt from Indianapolis. Love Locked On Bulls. It's my favorite podcast. Got me into podcasts in general. Thanks for reaching out to us, and thanks for listening, being a loyal listener. It says, do you guys think our young core that we have right now in place is better than the baby Bulls core that beat the Heat in the playoffs back in the early 2000s? So he's talking about like the Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Luol Deng team, right? So do you think that team and Andres Nocioni, which shout out to Andres Nocioni, one of my favorites. Do you think that team is better right now that was assembled back then than it is with the team that we have currently assembled?
I think it's close, because I think I hear that comparison a lot when you're talking about the ceiling for this Bulls roster right now. Some think that it's really high. But I hear a lot of people talk about this assemblance of young talent on this roster right now reminds people of the scrappy baby Bulls, who were never the most talented team. They had some good pieces, but no great pieces, and were a team that would kind of be a middle of the pack. Yeah, you could probably make the playoffs, but you're not winning any titles kind of team. And as it sits right now, and again, there's plenty of room to still see growth in players like LaVine, Lowry, Wendell. We'll see what Kobe White looks like and what he can do. It's hard to say, but as of right now, I would say that it's not ridiculous to make the comparison that the ceiling for this Bulls roster as currently assembled is similar to the ceiling of those baby Bulls of the early aughts.
I think I'm in agreement with you. It's kind of cool to look back. The Miami Heat were the defending NBA champions when the Bulls knocked them out in that 2007 playoff. So that's kind of cool to see. And Miami led in a lot of those games.
And didn't just knock them out. It was a clean sweep, which is just
awesome.
And the
Bulls started off, like, finished the season really, really good. And were really strong. And a lot of those games, the Heat were leading in most of those games. And the Bulls ended up pulling off a lot of second half comebacks. And that was thanks to Luol Deng and Ben Gordon and Kirk Heinrich for having huge games. But it's just a reminder, too. I was thinking about Tyrus Thomas, too. This rivalry that the Bulls had back in the mid-2000s where Tyrus Thomas got his face bashed in like opening night or like the first three games into the season. And weird things were happening with this Bulls-Heat rivalry. And that's kind of died off now. Like, we had that rivalry sparked back up when LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade were there. And we had Noah and we had Derrick Rose and early Jimmy Butler. But that rivalry has kind of gone away now, which is unfortunate because I feel like the Bulls don't really have a true rival anymore.
No, we don't. The last time I would say the Bulls had a true rival was just whichever team LeBron was on, whether it was Miami or Cleveland.
That's true.
The Bulls' latest rival is LeBron. Now he's gone to the West Coast, and the Bulls don't really have a rival right now. Also, you kind of have to be a competent team to have a rival, and the Bulls have not been a competent team for the last few years.
That's true, too. That's true. All right, thanks
Ooh,
for the
here's
text.
One, Jordan. Cole from the 217. I feel like Cole's a regular. In all caps, AD wants to come to Chicago. Heart emoji. If we can sign him with this current core, I'd be ecstatic. Cole, take a chill pill, then take 10 more, and then log off and don't text us for a while.
Oh,
I kid. I love you, Cole. No, not happening.
We talked about this before. And on yesterday's episode, well, the one that you're listening to right now currently, the AD thing, and I heard Jalen Rose talk too, and I saw your tweet as well. It's just like Jalen Rose guaranteed that Zach LaVine was going to be traded on draft night, and that clearly didn't happen. So we'll see what Anthony Davis decides to do. And I think it's all going to be predicated on the fact that what happens with him and the Lakers over the next year or two.
Yeah, I still stand by the fact that I'm not saying it's impossible that AD will ever don a Bulls jersey before he retires. I'm saying if he does, it'll be towards the end and not in his prime. Here's one from Tucker in San Diego. How confident are you that the Bulls make a push for the eighth and final playoff spot this coming season? Jordan?
Oh, confidence level.
Now, so the phrasing here is interesting. How confident are you that the Bulls make a push for the eighth and final playoff spot? So maybe he's asking not necessarily how confident are you that the Bulls will be a playoff team and get the eighth seed, but at least like be in the hunt. Say like the Bulls have, 6 to 8 games left when we hit April 1st and they are within striking distance of the eighth and final playoff seed. Let's frame it that way. How confident are you that that will be the scenario when the Bulls hit April 1st and say that they're like 1.5 or 2 games out of the eighth seed?
I'm confident if everybody stays healthy. If we hit the February 1st, right before the trade deadline, and this Bulls team is only a game, 2 games back of that eighth seed or hanging on there with that group of like 4 or 5 teams that could compete for the seventh or the eighth seed, if everybody stays healthy, or at least your starting five stays healthy, that core group, I'm pretty confident, man. Like, I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but at least to be competitive through February, and we're still looking and talking about a potential playoff push by the end of February. We're talking about guys that the Bulls could add at the trade deadline as opposed to selling off. I'm pretty confident that can happen if everybody stays healthy. I like the way that this roster is shaped up, and that back end of the East would be difficult. But again, like, history tells us that a 21 to 23 game jump is nearly impossible unless you added 2 or 3 stars. But I think this team is definitely going to be better and more competitive if they do stay healthy. So I would say I'm pretty confident that they'll hang around and they'll be in the mix. Now, I don't know if they'll for sure end up with the 7th or the 8th seed. But yeah, I think by February, if we're fully healthy, we'll still be talking about a conversation where the Bulls are hanging around for a potential playoff spot.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm with you for the most part, maybe a little less optimistic. If it's how likely or how confident am I that the Bulls can be in the hunt for the eighth seed as the season starts to wind down? I'd say somewhere a little less than 50% confident. I think that there is a slightly higher chance that by the time we hit April 1st, it is clear that the Bulls will not be a playoff team than the opposite scenario. I'm not saying there's zero shot again. And I think it's, you know, something you touched on, if healthy, which is a big if based on this team's recent track record, then it's certainly a lot more possible. But likely, I still lean towards not. It's more unlikely than likely that if we hit April 1st, the Bulls still have a real shot to grasp that eighth seed.
I'm thinking about teams like, again, I don't like using this comparison because I think the Kings front office is kind of whack, but the Kings last year, you know, by February, they were at a point where they were looking to add and they were looking to try to fight for that eighth seed. And then things kind of spiraled out of control in the last 6 weeks of the season for them and they missed the playoffs. But the Orlando Magic are another team that were someone that I can kind of compare to. They turned it on and did kind of the opposite effect of what the Kings did last year. They turned it on in the last 6 weeks and went on a 6-game winning streak in March. And then they closed out the season on a 4-game winning streak. And then in the middle of February, they were on a 5-game winning streak as well, which included one of the... which kind of weird because the Bulls ended up beating them twice after getting their ass handed to them back in early December. But they did have Vucevic, who was an all-star last year, and Aaron Gordon played really well for them. And they had some other like veteran role players that ended up stepping up for them, Terrence Ross being one of them, DJ Augustine another. So those two teams, I would hope that the Bulls emulate this year, right? That they're going to be fun going into February and at least we'll have fun, exciting basketball worth watching. That's where I'm at. Like, if I want confidence in hanging around with the eighth seed or the seventh seed in the playoffs, I want the Bulls to be in that conversation come February.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like when you talk about Orlando or some of those other teams that the Bulls might try to emulate as far as being in it and being active and being aggressive and trying to win games towards the end, you're also talking about the teams that the Bulls would have to leapfrog in order to make the playoffs. Because I think, you know, it's all pretty much agreed across the board, for the most part, the top six teams in the East, you know, in no particular order, Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Toronto, Indy, Brooklyn, that's six. And then seven and eight, you got Miami, Orlando, Chicago, Atlanta, and Detroit fighting for those last two spots.
Yeah, that's a good call. Definitely a good call. So thanks for the question. 217, they sent us a picture from Instagram from Thaddeus Young. This is about a week ago. Thad Young, who went bowling, and he, from what he had posted on Twitter, he bowled a 178, and somebody's like, if you guys should try to do something with Thaddeus Young before the season starts, maybe a bowling for charity thing. I will tell you, I'm not going to be challenging any NBA players to any bowling matches anytime soon. Like, after Bobby Portis completely blindsided me by bringing his own damn ball to our event.
I mean, he didn't blindside you, man. He told you that he was one of the best bowlers in his region. Whatever the hell that means.
And he backed it up too. Like, I mean, this
dude,
Bobby Portis, went to the bowling alley a week before our event and was bowling there and practicing on the lanes. Like, if that's not commitment and dedication to standing up for you believing you're the best bowler in your region, I don't know what was.
Hey, it's that kind of work ethic that explains why Bobby Portis is a professional athlete and you and I are sitting here talking about professional athletes.
That's true. But,
I mean, so the first game was kind of a warm up for both of you guys. I know Bobby won both of them, but it was his second game, right? That Bobby bowled like a 256 or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
256, I want to say.
He bowled like a 170. He like bowled like a 171 or 172, and I bowled like a 156 or 160. So it was closer in that first game, but then he just absolutely wiped the floor with me in the second game.
Right. And this picture of Thad Young here on social media, this score, we don't know how many games he played, but in this particular game, he bowled a 178, which is respectable, but not like Bobby Portis levels of crazy.
Correct. And I still shout out to the venue that allowed us to have that event, King's Dining and
Kings,
Entertainment.
Man.
That was awesome. But I still blame the fact that they had the old school lanes where I couldn't step all the way over to the left or the right. I had to be like straight up in the middle. So I'm going to blame it on that.
Excuses. You got your ass handed
to
you.
That second game I did, but pretty much everybody but a professional bowler would have had their ass handed to them with Bobby bowling a 256.
I mean, 250. I've never seen somebody bowl a perfect game. I'm not hanging out in bowling alleys that often. But so I'm pretty sure 256 is, if not the best, one of the best games I've ever seen bowled, like right there in front of me. And man, Bobby backed it up.
This text is from Nathan. Hey guys, sorry, listening to your last episode while texting in. To answer your question, Matt, no, I would not want to hire a dynasty player to be a part of the Bulls unless they are good at one of the three things: coaching, player development, or player recruiting. It would just be another typical in-house ticket seller move, and I'm so sick of the front office making those types of moves. So no, I wouldn't want any one of those unless they're good at one of those three options. Kind of agree with what he's saying here. Like, I don't want them to do something just to do it. You know, the player ambassadors are cool, and I'm glad that the Bulls do that and keep their older players still involved, because it could be the opposite turn. It could be like, look at the Knicks, what, last year or 2 years ago, where they kicked Charles Oakley out of Madison Square Garden and like basically annexed him from being a part of anything with the Knicks. So I'm glad it's not like that. I'm glad that at least players are involved, but you could put the Bulls on the opposite spectrum, that maybe those guys are too much involved or handed lifetime jobs with this franchise. So I'm kind of with what Nathan's saying.
Yeah, to me, it's just, it goes back to the issue of the Bulls doing everything in-house to a fault, like to such an extreme extent that it hinders their ability to run a successful organization, and it would be more of the same. I'm with you. I think that the fact that we have these advisor to the president roles for some of the most iconic names of the glory years of this organization is a good thing. And when you see Scotty sitting courtside, or, you know, like just personally getting to hang out with Horace, because not only is he an advisor, but he, you know, chips in and does pre and post game stuff, getting to talk Bulls basketball, talk old, you know, glory days with Will Perdue. It's awesome. It's awesome. And it's an important part of, I think, the fandom of this team. But there also is a point where the fans start to feel like they take advantage of us, and they take advantage of nostalgia, because nostalgia is one of the most powerful drugs that exists. It's not a synthetic drug, but it is one of the most powerful drugs that exists. And Bulls fans are always addicted to it. And it allows them to get away with shit that they shouldn't get away with. And bringing in familiar names to hold more important, prominent roles within the organization would only further that problem.
Bulls are a hell of a drug, that's for sure. NBA basketball is a hell of a drug in general. This one from the 210, we'll take a few more texts and then we'll get out of here. 210 says, done Felicio Blakeney and a second for Kent Bazemore. Saves Portland a boatload in luxury tax. They need a backup point, and Felicio could be long stretched for more savings. Hood at small forward, by the way. I believe the luxury tax is around $132 million. Bulls aren't even close to it. What else would you be getting back for Kent Bazemore, though? I'm not going to take Kent Bazemore's final year of his contract. I guess this would be getting off of Felicio's money and just moving Dunn for the sake of moving Dunn. But like, even if I'm taking Kent Bazemore back for a year with all of that money, I still want something else attached to that. Like, I get that you're getting off Felicio, and that's the worst contract in the NBA by far. But to me, I'm like, does that do anything for this Bulls team? Not really. I mean, I guess you would add more money next offseason, but we kind of know that things are going to be set in 2020, and really the money that you need off is in 2021.
Yeah, also, and I'm not entirely sure here if there is a restriction, but Bazemore was just traded last month to Portland from Atlanta.
Yeah, this would have to be a deal done after December 15th.
Right now, Bazemore can't be traded because he just arrived. So, I mean, if you're that hot and eager to get off of Felicio's contract and to just move on from Chris Dunn, so that, you know, you get rid of some of the backlog at the point guard spot and eliminate any possibilities for chemistry issues or uncomfortability with, you know, the team spirit of this team. Then, you know, I guess I could see the logic to it there. And, you know, you won't catch me crying with the Denzel Valentine departure either. So the other thing to think about is, I, you know, Portland's made some interesting moves, including just the other day signing our old pal Pau Gasol to add to their front court depth while they try and get over the still existing absence of Yusuf Nurkic. But you know, they're a team that they're being overlooked in the West just because so many other teams in the West made bigger, more aggressive, or bold, or crazy, shocking moves. But I still very much think with, you know, with Dame and McCollum, they're gearing up for another playoff run. And maybe they find that Bazemore is a useful piece that they don't want to move, and they're willing to just, you know, bring him in and pay him the final year of his deal and then let him move on after that. But they want him and see him as a useful piece in the meantime.
Crazy thing about Portland, man, is Anfernee Simons, who they drafted, I believe, 2 years ago. That guy, I've been reading a ton on him just because that was a guy that I wanted the Bulls to see if they could reach out and take on some of that money at the trade deadline. But I've been keeping track on him because he's very interesting to me. People are saying that that dude in 2 or 3 years could potentially be a star in the NBA. Like, he has all of the tools and all of the skill to be able to do that. And Portland's kind of stashed him, kind of put him in the G League and was like, go get your reps. We'll develop you a little bit there. And should Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum leave, Damian Lillard's not going to leave now because he signed an extension. But should they move CJ McCollum, could kind of throw Anfernee Simons in there as well. I think this Portland Trailblazers team is going to be legit next year. It's more upgraded than it was last year, adding Hassan Whiteside, who I'm wondering if, because he left Miami now, just a change of scenery, will end up turning out to be the old Hassan Whiteside where he got paid the season before that. And like you said, adding Pau Gasol too to that mix and getting off of guys like Myers Leonard's money and adding more wing depth, I think that Portland Trailblazers team is probably going to be better than they were last year. So they should be a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, I don't have any interest in taking Ken Bazemore back unless I'm getting something out of it, which the biggest thing would be getting off Felicio's money.
Man, when that day happens, whether it's, you know, soon or 2 summers from now, either way, I will rejoice.
The final text here, this is coming off a conversation we had on Tuesday, Matt, from the 559, said, Thad Young should decline the USA basketball invite, although it is a great honor to play for your country. The reason he should decline is it's because it's too close to training camp and he needs to concentrate on the season.
Yeah, so, that's one of the two opinions that I think split the fan base. I ran that poll. I think it did end up being somewhere in the low 60s percentage vote for yes, go play, and then 32-33% saying, or 30 something like that, saying no, stay home, stay healthy, which appears to be the side that our texter from the 559 has chosen. Like, I get it. I get why people would want the Bulls players to go and represent recruiting, playing against the best competition in the league, etc., and why they wouldn't like staying healthy and focusing on the season. It's just a matter of preference and what you think is more important. To me, if Thad Young declines the invitation, I will be okay with it. What about you?
Yeah, I'd be all right with it. Like, if he goes, I'd be very happy for him. Like, I don't think that
I'd be fine with it.
I don't think a guy
way.
Like Thaddeus Young needs to really like concentrate and be super, super locked in. Like, I get that he's joining a new team this year, but still, like, it's only 2 weeks. It's less than 2 weeks where he's going to be playing in those games. And I think it's a huge honor. And for a lot of these guys that are declining, I think it would declining their invitation. Kevin Love just declined his yesterday, which was very bizarre. The reason he gave was hoping.
Right. I saw a headline that said, like, he's going to focus on the Cavs championship.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a troll headline or what, but that's
real. I didn't actually look further into it. I just saw a headline and I was like, well, that has to be an Onion article,
it's
right?
Strange. So strange. But yeah, I either way, it's up to him if he wants to play or doesn't want to play. But if he does go and play, because look, Thomas Hadaransky is going to play for the Czech Republic this year too. So that's another Bulls player that's going to be a part of that this before training camp starts.
Right.
But I'm cool either way.
Speaking of that, before we get out of here, because you just mentioned him, Hadaransky. So this isn't a text. This is a comment to us from Twitter. Our pal Renee on Twitter, who is a Blues artist who is from Chicago but is currently living in Prague. So if anyone knows about Hadaransky, it's this dude. He commented to us, well, first of all, showed us a picture of Hadaransky repping his Czech Republic jersey and saying the hype's already around. You know, this is a picture that was on the subway in Prague. And so here's our pal Renee on Bulls Twitter. Sato's first name is pronounced Tomash. Toe, like on your foot. Mosh, like mosh pit. Emphasis on the first syllable. Tomash. The Czech way of saying this, very common name here. Trust me, anything and everything else is simply a foreign misinterpretation and an improper pronunciation. So, Satoransky's first name, Tomash. Not Thomas, not Tomas, Tomash. There you go.
The likelihood of most people knowing that is probably very, very slim to none. And I don't think broadcasters even call him that either, which is...
That's funny because Renee followed it up with, pass it on, I can't endure a season of announcers and podcasters mispronouncing it all season. It's cringeworthy hearing the various bastardizations. I hope Stacey King gets the memo.
Well, if you're mad, if he's angry about the fact that we're mispronouncing people's names, well, I don't know what to tell you, man.
I mean... That we live in a city where people are still calling into Chicago Sports Talk Radio and calling him Mitch Trubinsky. In my debate with C-Red Fred on our special Outsiders Debate episode last month, C-Red Fred, the know-all prophet of Bulls Nation, is still referring to Chandler Hutchison as Chandler Hutchinson. Just had to throw that out there.
I've got one more question, Matt. I want to really get to this really quick. This is from Will Brooks in Alabama. He said, can you guys rank these players for me and rate these in order of what you think they're going to be? So he doesn't really say what he like currently or what they are going to project to. But it's Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Tatum, Fox, Simmons, Mitchell, Lowry, Kuzma, and Dennis Smith Jr.
All right. So my thoughts on this, and this is just kind of, you know, immediate reaction to this list of names that's been thrown at us. The only player on that list who I can confidently say right now and whose trajectory are arguably better than our pal Lauri Markkanen's, I would say, is Donovan Mitchell. Some people might think that's crazy because this list includes Ben Simmons and Jason Tatum. Personally, I think Simmons is overrated. I think Tatum is also overrated, although less overrated than Simmons. But I truly believe that the only person on this list who I'm taking ahead of Lowry, based on what we've seen right now, is Donovan Mitchell. And Lowry's two on this list, and everybody else behind that, I don't care what order you put him
Interesting.
In.
I have Simmons as my number one out of this ranking. So that's where I think you and I have talked about this before, that I know that you think Simmons is overrated, and I don't. I think he's still by far one of the best players. And according to this ranking, I think he's the best player out of this group. So I have Simmons 1, Donovan Mitchell number 2.
Scored 1 point in a playoff game. In a critical playoff game, the dude scored 1 point.
I get
point.
It. He's still young, though. Like, let's consider the age, too. And, you know, he gets time to develop just like every single other player does, too, no matter if he's on a playoff team or not.
I'll let you continue in a second. But these videos have gone viral the last couple of days about, like, oh, look at Ben Simmons in the
That's
gym.
A joke,
he's been working
man.
On his
I hate
jumper.
Those videos.
He took one jump shot. The rest of the video was him passing and dunking. Give me a break.
I hate those videos, man. But anyway, Simmons 1, Donovan Mitchell number 2, Jason Tatum number 3, De'Aaron Fox number 4, I have Lowry at number 5, Kuzma number 6, Lonzo Ball number 7, Dennis Smith Jr. number 8, and Markelle Fultz at number 9. So I think Lowry is definitely in the top 5, but in terms of what they're going to be, I feel like Fox, Tatum, Mitchell, and Simmons all have a slight edge on Lowry Markkanen, and that more goes to his defensive side of the ball than any other part of his game. I get that he is... if we were just ranking these guys on offensive potential, it would be Donovan Mitchell number 1, Lowry number 2. But overall, I think Lowry still has a lot of potential, but I think Fox, Tatum, Mitchell, Simmons, for me at least right now, project better than what Lowry's going to be.
And to me, of anyone on this list, outside of maybe Fultz, who's just such a weird mystery at this point, based on the way his career started, the one that is most intriguing to me is Tatum, who, you know, just came onto the scene and just impressed so many people in his rookie year. And then this past season in Boston was just so disjointed and messy and confusing, and the Kyrie stuff that was just always a problem. And Tatum kind of had a down year when everybody expected him to like double down and like really turn into a star. And so I think with the way that the Celtics have been retooled, not only how does Tatum develop some chemistry with Kemba Walker, who's going to come in and run the show now, but is Tatum going to have a bounce back year and really assert himself as a young star in this league now that the Kyrie headache has been resolved? And I think of the list of these players, you know, behind Fultz, Tatum is the one that most people will be looking to be like, is this kid a star or is
not? Agreed.
And
I'm very curious without Kyrie now, how that changes. Like if that dynamic with that team changes, because Jason Tatum popped off when Kyrie Irving was sitting on the bench, especially in those playoffs. So I'm curious to see how him and Jaylen Brown kind of bounce back after the whole dysfunction with Kyrie was there and all of that was going on, now that they have the team to themselves. And the addition of Kemba Walker as well, see how that dynamic works. But if he can bounce back and play like he did in his rookie season, I think he's back on track to where he was supposed to be. And again, all of these dudes are so young still, too. So I mean, at 25 years old, a lot of these guys have, what, have 6-7 seasons under their belt already? So I'm interested to see what they look like in 4 or 5 years and if they continue to incline. But I think a lot of these guys on this list can still be considered future all-stars, or at least have that potential there. The only ones that I would say that probably don't are Markelle Fultz and maybe Dennis Smith Jr. Like, I still even think Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma can still be guys that border on that all-star type of level. We'll just have to see over the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. But hey, man, Dennis Smith Jr. has got all these power forwards to pass the ball to this upcoming season in New York. So he's got that going for him.
Yeah, good luck with that. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop us your texts, your voicemails. We'll be back at Mailbag next week. Every single Wednesday we do that. So we've been kind of making it a common thing here where we're going to take most of the voicemails on that Wednesday episode. If we don't get as many voicemails, we'll take texts as well with that. But we try to get to text on a single episode, voicemails on a single episode as well. So drop all of your voicemails and your texts at 331-979-1369. We're on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, literally anywhere you get your podcasts. We are sure to be there. So make sure you subscribe so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. We are out of here. Have a great day. Be back tomorrow to drive you into the weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out of here. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.